would you like people to get out of your novel during this time? Because it, to me, again, I'll reiterate, there's a lot of self-help in what's happening in our globe through this book right now. What are some of the things that you were aiming for, and what do you want folks to get from this book?
Well, one of the things that the book starts off with is a somewhat over black and white contrast between conspiracy theory on the one hand and science on the other. And one of the things that Adam has to discover, I mean, Adam is a scientist, so he knows that science actually is not just fact. You know, like Fauci has said, you know, science is a continuing, ongoing exploration, getting closer and closer to the truth, but never actually ever reaching it completely. And the thing that Adam has to realize, appreciate, and come to terms with is the fact that there is such a thing as an emotional truth. It might be irrational, it might not make sense, but it's what people genuinely feel. And they can't, you know, they can't deny that feeling. For example, you know, Julia feels irrational fear at the COVID, even though the COVID-19 has hardly started up, you know, at the beginning of the book. She's already afraid of dying. And so, you know, the book tries to find some kind of compromise between her real fear, which is genuine, but which therefore tends to overbalance into the realm of conspiracy theory, because she jumps on conspiracies about 5G towers and goodness knows what, and he has to constantly sort of bring her back from that.
Yeah.
And his own over, and I think this comes from me too, from myself, his excessive rationality, you know, his excessive reliance upon reason and facts, which, you know, are very important, but they're not everything. And that's what he has to find. And it's when the two of them understand each other's, you know, position that hope for the future then breaks out.
Tell the audience about the derivation of the title Dangerous Conjectures, because there's a story behind that title.
Well, you know, it is itself a quotation from Hamlet. Mm-hmm. And it's when Claudius is really worried about the effect that Ophelia's madness will have in spreading discontent in the kingdom, and particularly, you know, the likelihood that it could form the basis for, what should I say, you know, an uprising against him. I do cite somewhere at the beginning the actual quotation. And they do, very early on in the book, the Adam and Julia, the two major characters, do go to a production of Hamlet the Berkeley Rep.
Ah, yes.
And, of course, they take different sides, and they, what shall I say, they identify one with Ophelia, of course, Julia with Ophelia, and he identifies with Hamlet. And Hamlet acts as a kind of motif, sub-motif, very, very... quietly done, shall I say. I mean, there are not many overt references to it. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, it does act as a motif, because Denmark, you remember the rotten state of Denmark?
Yes, of course.
I mean, in a way, the United States in 2020 resembled it in some ways. I mean, it had at its top someone who was lying to the country. And it had a, what shall I say, a sense of corruption seeping down through the system, mm-hmm. and all not being well, the truth not being told, and so on. So it seemed to me particularly appropriate. The quotation, incidentally, is she being Ophelia,
yes.
She may strew dangerous conjectures in ill-breeding minds. Well, as the book is about conspiracy theories, and one particular conspiracy theory, QAnon, that what is that doing if it's not spreading, you know, dangerous conjectures in the minds of the population?
Tell us a little bit about your thoughts, without giving away too much of the book, just your thoughts of the incredible ideology of what is QAnon.
Well, as I say, when I started writing the book, which was... you know, way back at the beginning of the year, 2020, QAnon, whenever I mentioned QAnon to any of my friends, they said, "What? What's that?" You know, and then I would explain to them the, you know, cracked theory of what it stood for, and they'd say, "Oh, you know," I mean, they would dismiss it. You know, clearly this is too crazy, you know, to ever catch on. And of course, as you know, it got more and more and more popular. Now, one of the things, one of the suggestions that I particularly value about QAnon is that people are looking for somewhere where, instead of where their lives are in ruin, you know, they're living from paycheck to paycheck, they're waiting to be kicked out of their house, they've lost their job, you know, COVID is closing in on them. And what else is oppressing them? Other conspiracy theories. Take the opioid, which of course features in the book. I mean, that was a conspiracy theory by Purdue. And, you know, it took in a huge percentage of the American population as a conspiracy theory. Mm-hmm. Or take the Boeing Max, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, again, people were suffering at the expense of an untruth that was being spread by a corporation. So they themselves are victims of conspiracy theories and are at the same time seeking relief by subscribing to a conspiracy theory that makes them the winner. You know, they're on the triumphant side. Any minute now, the president is going to defeat all our enemies and is going to, you know, arrest them and send them off to Guantanamo Bay. I mean, that was basically part of the QAnon.
Right.
Give us a sense of your writing process. Are you one who every day sits down at his computer and writes a minimum number of words, or do you wait for the muse to arrive and then go on for 10, 12, 16 hours of writing? Give us a sense of your process.
Well, of course, you know, this last novel was written during the pandemic, during lockdown, and, you know, being a senior, I was staying, apart from taking the dog for walks, I wasn't going anywhere. I was having my food delivered, etc. So I had a lot of time. And that had allowed me to do what comes naturally to me at any rate, which is to just write when I feel like it. I don't write at a particular moment of time or at a particular hour for a particular length of time or a number of words. I try and allow spontaneity, particularly as I start off with an outline that's not very detailed, but enough to keep track of the plot. Mm-hmm. And then allow, you know, what I therefore am looking for when I'm actually doing the writing is for the story itself to take over and dictate to me what needs to be done or said in any particular situation. And that process is certainly enhanced by allowing your moods, etc., to take when you write and when you don't write.